the Senate State Affairs Committee. Today's date is March 31st, 2011. Time is 9:03 in the morning. We have a full committee with us today, Senator Kukesh, Senator Pasvan, Senator Geisel, Senator Meyer, myself, Olakowski. We have two pieces of legislation before us, both of which we've previously heard. The first is Senate Bill 104, sponsored by Senator French, which we heard just last Tuesday. And the bill would give owners of manufactured homes better access to traditional mortgage financing. We have Senator French with us again today with his staff, Andy Modero. If you could please come forward. Welcome back to the committee. Put yourselves on the record. And my hope was to, just in the interest of timeliness, there was a question outstanding about title companies. And talk to Senator Pasvan. This bill does have a further committee referral to judiciary. And with less than 2 weeks left in the session, I thought it might be appropriate to try to get this bill moving. If you could put yourself on the record and give us any final words that you might have.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. My name is Hollis French. I represent West Anchorage in the State Senate. With me is Andy Modero, the staffer in my office assigned to this bill. Mr. Modero does have some information about questions that were asked last week, but I appreciate the committee's willingness to move the bill along.
Thank you, Chair Wilkowski, members of the committee. For the record, Andy Modero, staff to Senator French. I know last, actually it was Tuesday, we talked a little bit about municipal taxation and how that works under this legislation. Starting with that issue, I reviewed the current municipal property tax laws, AS 2945-10 through 250. And on page 13 of this bill, you'll see AS 2945-070 being amended, and it specifically relates to mobile homes. Basically, this law today requires municipalities to treat mobile homes as real property for taxation purposes unless they are expressly classified as personal property by a municipal ordinance. I got in touch with a few assessor's offices and also reviewed some websites. And in the Fairbanks North Star Borough, the Kenai Peninsula Borough, and the City and Borough of Juneau, a manufactured home currently today is taxed as real property. Just across the board, that's how it works. In the municipality of Anchorage, it depends on whether or not the mobile home is in a mobile home park or if it's on someone's private property. If it's on private property, it's taxed as real property. If it's on in a mobile home park where the person does not own the property, then it's personal property. But those individuals need to file annual tax filings each year to pay personal property taxes on those mobile homes. So I just wanted to follow up with the committee on that. It doesn't look like this legislation will create a whole new tax base that doesn't currently exist for
great, thank
communities.
You for that research. Our questions for the bill sponsor. Okay, the issue of title title companies did come up. Senator Pasvan had asked for that. Both Senator Pasvan and I are on the Judiciary Committee, and I guess I would request if we could get some input from the title companies at that point. It seems more of a judiciary issue rather than a state affairs issue. I know this bill has been around a long time. I remember hearing it in the judiciary last year. So I know that it's gone through a number of iterations, but in the interest of moving the bill along, I'm happy to move it out today and hope that we can get it heard quickly next week. Further questions for the bill sponsor? Okay, is there any committee discussion on the bill? Is there a motion to move the bill from committee onto the next committee?
Sure, Mr. Chair. I would move that we move Senate Bill 104 version /I from this committee with individual recommendations and attach fiscal note.
Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, the bill's moved. Thank you. Take a brief at ease to sign the sheet. back on the record. Next up, we have Senate Bill 89 regarding Legislative Ethics Act. It's a bill sponsored by Senator Cockhill. Senator Cockhill is with us. Bill has been revised once by the sponsor and once by my office since we last heard it. The new CS is version T. Could I have a motion to adopt that for discussion purposes?
Mr. Chair, I move that we bring the CS for Senate Bill number 89 version backslash T before the committee for purposes of discussion.
Okay, thank you, and I'll object for discussion purposes. And if I'd like to call Senator Coghill and his staffer Reneva to the committee. Welcome, and please put yourself on the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'm Senator John Coghill. District F is my district, which goes from Whittier, Valdez, North Pole, Delta, and regions around it.
For the record, Reneva Moss, staff to Senator Coghill.
Okay, thank you. Do you have anything you want to say at this point, Senator Coghill?
Mr. Chairman, I reviewed the section. Is your intention to go through the sectional, or?
I was going to have my staff member go through the sectional.
I could comment on what is going to be left out after that, maybe. And at this point, there are some good things that I've seen in the CS. But it does leave some questions out that I think we need to consider.
Okay. Let me call my staffer, Michelle Seideman, to discuss the changes, and then let me just see if there are questions before we you briefly depart, and we'll have you back. Okay, seeing none, Michelle, if you could tell us about the changes that were made.
Hi, my name is Michelle Seideman, and I'm staff to Senator Bill Wilikowski. I did put in front of each of the members a written explanation of changes, but why don't I just walk through those? So I'll be talking about version T, which you now have before you. This version makes four changes to the version before that, which was a version E, I believe. Just check that version E. So the first substantive change it makes is to remove provisions from the bill that would have allowed a legislator to use his or her legislative mailing list for campaign purposes. So there were two places in version E when that allowance was made. And if you need me to, I can tell you where those are, or we can just proceed with the more substantive overview.
If you could direct where the changes were.
On version E, page 3, lines 3 to 4, and I have additional copies of version E if anyone needs that. I can run back to the table. The version E came out between our last meeting and today, so I'm not sure if everyone, I believe those were distributed, but I'm not sure if everyone's got that. But I've got extra copies in back if anyone doesn't.
I get it. I think we're okay.
Okay, good. Okay, so on the version E, page 3, lines 3 to 4, there was underlined text. The underlined text said, a legislator's legislative mailing list for campaign purposes or the use of. And we have simply deleted that. On page 4, lines 26 to 27 had the exact same wording, and that has been removed. The next substantive change that's made in this CS is a provision was removed allowing a legislator or legislative employee to campaign or participate in partisan activities while on state travel. Again, in the version E on page 6, we had sections 3 and 4 that covered campaigning or participating in partisan activities while on state travel. The third substantive change made is that we added a very brief provision. I'm going to point you to where it is in the version T before you today. This provision allows a legislator or legislative employee to request to refrain from making a disclosure if making that disclosure would violate a rule adopted formally by his or her trade or profession, if state or federal law requires that person to follow the rules of his or her profession. So an example might be a lawyer who is governed by rules adopted by the Bar Association that might say that under various circumstances, if it would cause harm to the lawyer's client to reveal the name of the client, that it's the lawyer's responsibility not to do so. And my understanding is that in order to be a practicing lawyer in Alaska, you have to agree to abide by the rules of the profession. So let me just quickly find it in the new version T. I've got it highlighted here. Okay, page 10, lines 15 to 18, version T. And I'll read that new language to you. It says, a person may submit a written request to refrain from making a disclosure that is required by this chapter if making the disclosure would violate state or federal law, including the United States Constitution and the Constitution of the State of Alaska, or a rule adopted formally by a trade or profession that state or federal law requires the person to follow. So that's the new language, just the or a rule adopted formally by a trade or profession that state or federal law requires the person to follow. The fourth substantive change is that we have added language clarifying the requirement that volunteers or educational trainees complete the legislative ethics class. This requirement would only apply to volunteers or trainees who work more than 30 days. Casual or drop-in volunteers, those who come for an afternoon or several days, would not be required to take the course. And this is consistent with existing statute, AS 24.60.155, which requires employees who begin after the 10th day of the session to complete the course within 30 days. So right now, if you start 10 days after the session's begun, you've got 30 days to complete the required course. And Joyce Anderson is online. She did. We had initially proposed something that said if you worked for 40 days or more, and Joyce said, you know, I wouldn't.
40 hours.
40 hours, I'm sorry. That she said that right now I don't push anybody unless, you know, until that 30-day mark. On the 31st day, they have to have completed the class. So this is consistent with that, and I think we all can think of examples of inviting children to come help out in the office for an afternoon or other people that might want to see what it's like to be in a legislative office, and they're not really there for very long, and we don't need to burden them with taking a course if they're going to be there for just several hours or a couple days.
Okay, thank you, Michelle. Any questions?
Yes,
Michelle. Michelle, on page 10, section 8, you were talking about the disclosure by a professional. On line 18, it goes on, it says, the committee shall approve or deny the request. Who is the committee?
Senator Giesel, through the chair, my understanding is that it is the Legislative Ethics Committee.
Okay, thank you. Not APOC, pardon me, I'm sorry. Okay, thanks.
Other questions? Okay, thank you, Michelle. Okay, let's get Senator Coghill and his staff back, and if you have comments or changes, concerns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah,
Mr. Chairman, let's take the easy ones first. The 30-day issue on volunteers, I think, is an excellent idea. I think that that answers a good question. So, and the section 8 that deals with the disclosures, I thought that the law intended that, but having it explicit is good. So, you know, I think that's good. So, probably the real tough question. Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, maybe I have Reneva chime in on one other one too. She made a note of.
Mr. Chairman, Reneva Moss, staff to Senator Coghill. On page 12, there is also a change that was in our version of the CS, and this is a change that was requested by the chairman of the Legislative Ethics Committee. We have removed the language on line 26. That says, or unable to participate. He felt that the language made it too flexible for legislative alternates to be appointed, and he testified to that at the last meeting.
Okay, I'm just trying to follow you here. So this was a change that you had made in your CS and then?
Yes.
Okay. So if you could direct us to, so it's page 12, line
26.
Okay, the current law of version T, or
version T. That's
T as in
correct.
Thomas. Okay. And it currently reads, if both a regular legislative member and that member's alternate appointed under A of this section are not available to participate at the commencement of a proceeding under 246170, because they are disqualified under 246130H, the presiding officer of the House in which the two members shall serve shall appoint from the House an alternate and designate that alternate to participate in the proceeding. And you took out the words...
or unable to participate after 130H. The old language said they are disqualified under AS 246130H or unable to participate, comma, the presiding officer of the House in which the two members shall appoint from the House an alternate. And there was some lengthy testimony at the last meeting from Skip Cook about that.
Okay. Any questions on that point? Seeing none, please continue.
The two areas that I'll comment on, one of them I think is less important than the other. The less important one is the mailing list issue. The mailing list issue came from a advisory opinion that we wanted to include in the statutory language. And in dropping that out, I think what we're going to be saying is thou shalt not use your political mailing list in your office, or you should not use your political mailing list from your office in your campaign. And I'm taking that to mean this is what we're going to move forward on, although there is some language in there that says you can buy certain mailing lists that is generally open to the public. So I think the advisory opinion went to the direction that if it's in your possession, you can use it for either. So at this point, because of the way we're doing this statutorily, it'll probably make them revise that advisory opinion based on the testimony, that's all. So well, to me, that's the less important issue, but it is one issue.
Yeah, I would just say... if we take something out of a proposed piece of legislation, that does not alter any. I don't think legally that alters any of the existing advisory opinions or anything like that.
I think, Mr. Chairman, that's true. However, I think they'll consider the testimony, and that's why I wanted to kind of clarify. If we don't put it in statutes, we're saying we don't think it rises to that level. So, and I'm okay with that as long as we have a clear rule, one way or the other. The big question that gets pulled out of the T version is what happens while you're on state travel with regards to partisan activity. What we tried to put in the previous version that is now out of this version was to try to answer the question that has had several advisory opinions attached to it, looking for an answer, and I think the answer has been being looked for since 1993, if my memory serves me right. And that is, if you're under state travel, is there any time that partisan activity is acceptable? And our statutes have a strict prohibition on that, and we've tried to move around that in several different ways. And I tried to find a way to say there are times and reasons that you can do some partisan activity. And as I'm sitting in front of this committee, most of us live in the urban area. So when you go home to your place in Anchorage or I go home to my place in the North Pole Fairbanks area, I will go home and I can have committee meetings in that town that are legislative business and have people travel in from outside the state. I can go from that committee meeting right to a Republican luncheon. My friend who comes in from out of state or out of town cannot. And I think I'm trying to find a way to say there's a reasonable ethical conundrum here that looks for an answer, and that is if they travel in, can they accompany me to a Republican lunch, or can they go to a partisan event? And I tried to find ways and rules to answer that question. Well, that is out of this, so that means the question is left unanswered, and I understand the reason for doing that is it's a tough question to ask, because I saw the headline when this bill came out that the headline implied that we're trying to use state monies to campaign. And I'm trying to say there are times when people are traveling throughout their district, that they may at state expense come to do legislative business, but they, because of the fact that they have to travel maybe to several towns to do that, or their district may have several towns in it, that there is a reason to believe that somewhere along the line they're going to be partisan and it's not unethical. So with that out of this bill, that leaves us with a strict prohibition that we as legislators can't be partisan when we're under state travel. And that is a conundrum I think we need to answer.
Did you have anything you wanted to add, Ms.?
No, awesome. Mr.
Okay.
Chairman.
Questions for the sponsor of the bill? Comments? Anything else, Senator Cogfell?
No, I just wanted to make sure that you understood. I feel like the conundrum still needs an answer. And if this moves on through the committee, I will be asking that along the way.
And I would note the bill does have a further referral to the Judiciary Committee.
Yes.
Where I'm sure we'll be hearing this argument on your behalf some more.
And Mr. Chairman, just to make it clear, I have been kind of tasked to ask the question, and I know that many people feel less inclined to ask that question because it draws some fire. It's a tough question to ask. But in fairness to the people who live outside of the urban areas of Alaska, I think we really owe it to ourselves to ask, is it an ethical problem that we can answer? And I think we have an answer. So I will keep plugging away at trying to find a good way to say it.
Thank you, Senator Cargill. We have Joyce Anderson on the line for questions. Joyce, are you there?
Yes, I am, Mr. Chair.
Do you have any testimony you wanted to give?
Mr. Chair, the only thing I would like to say in committee members is that I agree with Senator Coghill, and when I say I agree, I'm talking on behalf of the Ethics Committee, that this has been an issue regarding state travel and campaigning for many years. And as Senator Coghill mentioned, when I performed some research within the office, I did find that since 1993 that the Ethics Committee has grappled with this idea or this concept. And the Ethics Committee feels it is the legislature that needs to decide if they want to change this policy or keep it as it is. And it's not within the framework of the Ethics Committee to the Ethics Committee has not made any specific proposal regarding campaigning and state travel, and they want to leave it up to the legislature to decide if that needs to be either amended or stay as is. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Questions for Joyce? Senator Coghill?
Mr. Chairman, I don't have a question for Joyce, but I do have a question for the committee members, and I would just enlist committee members to help me with some brain power on this. In the Ethics Act for the administration, they do talk about a de minimis use of time. That may or may not be able to be used in this, but I would solicit any input to try to find a way to answer that along the course of this bill. My guess is we'll be dealing with this bill both this session and the next session. So it's worthy of some work. But I would solicit the brain power to help us find an answer to that. And if the answer that I put in is not sufficient, I'm looking for help.
Okay. Yes, Senator Bastian.
You know, along that lines, is there some place that one could look for de minimis conduct? You know, in other words, I think that if someone just attends a luncheon, that's one thing, but if they're there because they're the keynote speaker, that might be another thing. You know, it's one thing that if they're there just, but if they're the signatory as being the sponsor of a political function, that's different than if they just attend. And I guess what I'm trying to struggle with is what is the definition of de minimis, and what are examples that might be part of that? Because I certainly recognize whether it's Senator Kukesh, if he happens to be in Fairbanks, or Representative Alan Dick, you know, I mean, they come a long ways to come into the central hubs of the community. And, you know, I don't know that it makes sense to bar their political voice completely, but then at the same time, you know, I think that there has to be some standard. And so what is that definition of de minimis?
Mr. Chairman, and I struggle with that because it's an intent question. And what I tried to do in crafting the language I had in the previous version was put it down to an action item, because trying to drill down to an intent always has to come before probably the committee. And that means an ethical complaint has to be brought based on a subjective question. If we put in our statutes actions that are bright lines, then the intent is not as big a problem, though I think somewhere along the line, if there's an ethical complaint, then it will come down to intent. But I'd rather have the statutes clear on action items so that we don't have to second-guess that every time we want to do something. And then if we do step across a bright line, then there might be a good reason for that intent, but that would have to go before the committee for discussion. And you know as well as I do that anytime there's an ethical complaint that goes before the committee, that it becomes a public question that puts people's integrity on the chopping block. So, and it may be a very legitimate question that the committee deals with and finally finds that there's no ill intent ever. And yet the name has already been drugged through the newspaper headlines. And so I'm trying to find a place where action items are more clear so that you know what once you do that, you're across a line that no matter what your intent is, you've crossed an ethical question line. And so that's why I put time frames and exact prohibitions. For example, fundraising, off the limits. 9 to 5, off limits, except for during those meal times and evening times. So I tried to get action items that were clear so that intent items, then if there are real honest-to-goodness intent questions, they can come before the committee. So that action versus intent and the de minimis is a subjective call that demands that somebody look for the intent, and the intent is always an attack item. So that's why I went the way I did, just to let you know what my motive was on trying to craft that type of language, looking for a clear action item intent. I mean, action item lines law. Because this, under so much of the ethics law, what we're trying to say is we know when you're acting good, but we need good guidelines when you're acting poorly, when you're acting unethical. And what we've done is we've put legislators who are not in urban areas under an ethical cloud. And I'm trying to find a way to dispel that cloud enough to allow them to be the people they are under the circumstances that Alaska kind of demands they live in.
Other questions, comments? Well, we can hold the bill and try to do a little more work on it, or we can move the bill to the Judiciary Committee. What is the will of the committee?
I think you just move it. It sounds like the Judiciary Committee needs to spend some time on it. Let's give them some time to spend some time on it.
Okay. Is that a motion to move the bill?
I'll move that we move the bill to the next committee of referral with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note.
Okay. Is there any discussion? Yeah, my staff is reminding me to clarify we're referring to version T.
I'm sorry, version T.
Yeah.
Sorry, version T.
Any objection to the motion?
Mr. Chairman, just on the motion, there is a zero fiscal note that's now traveling with it.
Thank you.
Well, I know it's zero, but we just want to forward it also anyway so they know what we're talking about.
So we'll move the bill along to the next committee. If there's no objection, the bill will move to the next committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note. And I want to thank you for your work on this bill. And you are on the next committee, so I'm sure we'll be continuing the discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
Yeah, I too want to appreciate Senator Coghill for his work on this. This is a very difficult area, very subjective and ambiguous in the sense that, you know, as the example you just gave, it's tough to find the right answer, the right solution. It's fair to everybody, the urban guys and the rural guys. So appreciate your doing your best and taking your best shot at this.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And with that, we're adjourned.